I'm Callie Crossley, and this is Under the Radar with Callie Crossley. And now for the part of the show we call Lanya. That's Creole for something extra. Presumptive presidential nominees President Biden and former President Trump have declared their positions on abortion. Here's President Biden at March's State of the Union address.
Those bragging about overturning Roe v. Wade have no clue about the power of women, but they found out when reproductive freedom was on the ballot. We won in 2022 and 2020, and we'll win again in 2024. If you, the American people, send me a Congress that supports the right to choose, I promise you, I'll restore Roe v. Wade as the law of the land again.
And just this week, former President Trump announced his position in a video posted to his Truth Social network.
My view is now that we have abortion where everybody wanted it from a legal standpoint, the states will determine by vote or legislation or perhaps both, and whatever they decide must be the law of the land, in this case, the law of the state. Now it's up to the states to do the right thing. Like Ronald Reagan, I am strongly in favor of exceptions for rape, incest, and life of the mother. You must follow your heart on this issue, but remember, you must also win elections to restore our culture.
When the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, abortion rights was pushed into a blazing spotlight. The intense fallout from the 2022 decision resulted in new state-sponsored legal limits to abortion access, as well as the successful blocking of would-be abortion bans in states like Kansas. Meanwhile, the Supreme Court will soon rule on whether Americans can access a major abortion medication, a method used by more than half of all who seek abortions. And Arizona's highest court ruled earlier this week that an 1864 law banning abortion is now enforceable. Despite the highly charged ongoing national debate about abortion, national surveys show Americans' attitudes remain about the same. And a new Mass Inc. poll of Bay Staters, co-sponsored by GBH and Commonwealth Beacon, echoes the national polling. Joining me now, Erin O'Brien, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Massachusetts Boston. Hi, Erin.
Hey, thrilled to be here.
Also with me, Mary Rose Mazzola, Chief External Affairs Officer for Planned Parenthood League of Massachusetts. Welcome, Mary Rose.
Thanks for having me.
And also with me, Amelia Bono, Executive Director of Shout Your Abortion, an abortion rights advocacy organization. Thanks for joining us, Amelia.
Thank you, Callie.
Well, I want to first give you the two questions from the GBH Commonwealth Beacon sponsored poll, a poll that was executed by Mass Inc. So the first question was, to the best of your knowledge, do you personally know anyone who has had an abortion? The answers were 51% yes, no, 43%, don't know or refuse to answer, 5%. And the second question, do you think the Supreme Court ruling striking down Roe v. Wade and removing the federal right to abortion was the right decision or wrong decision? Right decision, 19%. Wrong decision, 67%. Don't know or refused, 14%. And to give our listeners a sense of who answered the poll, about 1,002 Massachusetts residents from the period of time of March 21st to March 29th, 81% said they were very likely to vote. Only 12% said somewhat likely. 44% had an initial preference for Joe Biden, 26% Republican Donald Trump. Leaners were 46% in favor of Biden, 28% Trump. And finally, more women at 51% answered the poll, men at 49%, non-binary 1%. There's other data, but I just wanted everybody to know, well, who answered those questions? And that's who answered. So first thing I want to do is get all of your reactions to the poll results. I will start with you, Amelia.
I suppose with the first question about if you know anybody who's had an abortion, I think that the answers there are just very reflective of the fact that stigma is still pervasive enough that folks just aren't necessarily talking about their experiences openly. We all know a lot of people who have had abortions. One in three women has at least one abortion in their lifetime. And that is a consistent statistic across demographics, race, class. Over time in history, abortion has been a common part of reproductive life for Americans, and it continues to be even after the Dobbs decision. The number is just not reflective of reality because we still have more work to do in that department.
Now, the reason I started with you, you're not from Massachusetts, is because you've had an abortion in 2014. And your experience, this was before the overturning of Roe, was one that folks thought was the way it should be. You were able to express what you wanted, go through a procedure. You were supported in that decision. It was only afterwards you realized that, oh, wow, this is not the experience of most people. And it was very important that folks like yourself who have had an abortion and chose to have one speak up. So hence you found it, Shout Your Abortion. So I want to put that into context so people have a sense. So you are well fixed then from your work and personal experience to know that if someone says they don't know somebody who's had an abortion, likely that's just not the case.
That's right, Kelly. And I think that, you know, even like the moment that I looked down and saw the positive pregnancy test, you know, I had a moment of surprise. And then, you know, because I'm not somebody who wants kids, and I was like 90% sure that I didn't want kids when this happened almost 10 years ago now, I just kind of took a deep breath. And then I immediately knew that I was going to be okay, and that this wasn't a big emergency, and that I was going to be able to easily find the care that I needed and knew that I wanted. And I didn't have any like emotional or moral conflict. So even before the experience itself, I felt really empowered, you know, and I think that like the way that we process what could be a difficult experience in our lives has everything to do with how much support we have around us. And I live in Seattle, Washington. It's a very liberal area. It's very secular. I just simply hadn't grown up with a lot of anti-abortion noise in my life. And so I just knew I was going to be okay. And I think that even, you know, before I had the experience itself, I was aware that I was very, very lucky to be going into it that way. And I think that me speaking up about it had everything to do with me wanting that to be a more common experience for people.
So over to you, Mary Rose Mazzella, Chief External Affairs Officer for Planned Parenthood League of Massachusetts. This is a story or a question that would not seem uncommon to you. And some would say, as the way that Amelia has described Seattle would be the way people would describe Massachusetts, kind of a liberal-leaning state. So perhaps you were not surprised by the question. To the best of your knowledge, do you personally know anyone who has had an abortion? 51% yes, no, 43%. Don't know, 5%. Tell me your reaction.
Absolutely. I agree with Amelia that abortion stigma is still really strong. So many people are scared or ashamed to talk about their abortion, or in general, their experience with miscarriage and pregnancy loss, which, as we know, often involves abortion care. So what we try to do at Planned Parenthood League of Massachusetts is really demonstrate and share with our communities that abortion is normal and common. You heard the stats that Amelia shared, and you know, as the poll data shows, it is very likely that someone you know has had or will have an abortion, and that the folks who are saying they don't know anyone likely do. That person just hasn't been comfortable sharing it with them.
Okay. And Erin O'Brien, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Massachusetts, Boston. You know, this is in your wheelhouse of issues you study. So your response, reaction to the answers to the first question.
My two new friends are incredibly smart. I really reiterate what they say. That 43% number, that's public opinion. And public opinion can be false, not because it's a bad poll, it's a good poll. It's because of abortion stigma. You know, the numbers differ a little bit, but everyone knows someone who has had an abortion. If one in four women by age 45 have had an abortion, then every listener knows someone who has had an abortion. And on the political end of that, the more that, you know, Amelia and the groups that Mary Rose, Planned Parenthood, the more we talk about that, it is a normative experience. And we also know from the turnaround study and other data that it's women, women suffer when they are turned away from getting an abortion they desire. That's when there's mental health and physical challenges and kids that they already have not being raised in this stable environment. So the more that Massachusetts and other states can do to talk about how normative of an experience abortion is, that's better for politics and reproductive health for all women, regardless of whether they choose to have an abortion.
Now, I will point out that the only 21%, when they broke it down by in racial groups, of Asians said they knew someone who had an abortion, 54% Latino, 57% Black folks, and 53% white. And this may be attributed to the small sample size of 1,002 folks who were asked the question. So just wanted to put that piece on the table. Now, the second question was, do you think the Supreme Court ruling striking down Roe v. Wade and removing the federal right to abortion was the right decision or wrong decision? And right decision, 19%. Wrong decision, 67%. Don't know or refuse to answer, 14%. Going right to you again, Aaron, because this now is setting this issue into the political scenario where it's been moving even more since the overturning of Roe v. Wade.
Indeed. This is, to get 67% of individuals in Massachusetts to agree on anything is pretty telling. So that is a uniform and strong agreement that this was the wrong decision. Majorities of men and women think it's the wrong decision in the Commonwealth, 58% of men, 74% of women across all racial groups. Majority said it was the wrong decision. There were some differences in the racial groups, but that shows you how uniform public opinion is on the SCOTUS decision, Dobbs, that took away women's right to an abortion and made it this, you know, I'll be real technical, a hodgepodge of state laws that now women's reproductive lives are determined by where you live and whether they're going to, you know, honor a law from 160 years ago. So this is really telling uniform support, or I should say, against the Dobbs decision.
Is there anything in the data, if as you go deeper, that stands out for you about how this question was answered for Massachusetts citizens?
I would say that the gender breakdown wasn't surprising, that 74% of women said it was the wrong decision and 58% of men. Again, majorities, but there is a gender gap. There was also, again, majorities across the four racial groups that were asked, white, Black, Latino, and Asian. But 70% of whites said it's the wrong decision, where Blacks and Latinos were right around 55%. So there are some racial differences, but the overall takeaway is agreement that this was that the court got it wrong, with some more subtle differences across gender and race.
Okay, Mary Rose, how do you react to those answers, to the answers to the second question?
I think the abortion attitudes we see here showing strong opposition to the Dobbs decision are consistent with what we've known for years and what we're seeing time and again in public polling, not just here in Massachusetts, but across the country. And that is that Americans across all age, racial demographics, and increasingly gender dynamics overwhelmingly support abortion being legal. So you see here in this poll, even a majority of Republicans think that the Dobbs decision was incorrect. And I think we're also seeing some movement in men, to Aaron's point. I think the abortion bans that we're seeing across the country are getting more men involved in this fight for reproductive freedom because they understand how bans of this kind can impact them, can impact their families, and the health of people they care about. So while there's still that gender split, I think we are seeing men get more involved and move on this issue as well.
And finally, Amelia, your take on the second question.
You know, I think that this country has always been pro-choice. It's getting more and more pro-choice, pro-abortion, really. And I don't think that conservatives have a majority support for the Dobbs decision in the deepest of red states. Americans want abortion access. Americans use abortion care and need abortion care. And to me, what this survey, what this poll reflects is the fact that our democracy has a fundamental flaw, really, where conservatives have captured the courts and have spent the last 50 years, installing conservative justices that they knew would carry out this like vision that Americans just don't want. So the fact that lawmakers and that justices are able to regulate this issue in a way that's so profoundly out of step with what Americans actually want is a problem with our democracy. It's not a problem with, it doesn't have to do actually with the way that people feel. People have always wanted abortion access. And I think that conservatives are, it's kind of like a dog who caught the car situation for them now.
If you're just tuning in, this is Under the Radar with Callie Crossley. I'm Callie Crossley, and I'm speaking with Aaron O'Brien, Associate Professor of Political Science at UMass Boston, Mary Rose Mazzola, Chief External Affairs Officer for Planned Parenthood League of Massachusetts, and Amelia Bono, Executive Director of Shout Your Abortion. We're talking about data from a new GBH poll surveying local attitudes about abortion. All right, I want to move into a few issues that have come up or other factors that have come up since this poll. Again, this poll was March the 21st to 29th. Some of what I'm about to raise has been bubbling up around the country. And I'm talking about women who now have found themselves caught in these states with limited access to abortion and whose doctors are also caught in it. And they can't get any treatment unless they are really on death's door because of the way the laws are framed around abortion access, or in their cases, lack of access. So I want to give you a sense of who these women are, because I think that when the bans were put into place in the various states that they're in, I think it's 17 states now, the image of who is seeking an abortion, the woman seeking an abortion, is kind of a cavalier, you know, dating girl out here, wasn't careful, now she needs an abortion as birth control. But now what we're seeing are women who want to have their children, never imagined they would be in a situation where they'd have to have an abortion, but they have a medical emergency where an abortion is appropriate and can't get it. So there's a couple of examples from an ABC Hulu special called On the Brink. And these are the women that nobody thought of. First, let's hear from Kelly Shannon from Alabama. This is after she was denied a medical exception for the termination of her pregnancy.
We have a two-year-old daughter, and we were trying to expand our family.
My doctor looked at the constellation of symptoms that our baby had, and she said, the case is so severe that I don't see you having a problem having a termination at our hospital. Here's the paperwork if you want to sign it today. My doctor was struggling to form words because she was so angry with her colleagues and with her supervisors. My doctor stopped just short of calling her colleagues cowards.
Now, in 2022, CNN spoke with a woman, and these are more women now coming to the front talking about this particular experience. The Texas anti-abortion laws made her doctors nervous, as Kelly's were in Alabama, to perform a procedure for her. So she had to carry her dead fetus in her womb for 2 weeks. Here she is.
So you were walking around carrying a dead fetus.
And just emotionally carrying it around and just knowing that there's nothing you could do, it just feels very, it's like I can't grieve or move past it because I'm just walking around carrying it.
All right, Mary Rose, these are not voices that I think anybody thought they would hear from, you know, out front. And now they are. I'm wondering if the experiences of these women who are more and more vocal, and of course their doctors are too, might shift any of the attitudes that we've seen captured in this poll?
I think they absolutely will. I mean, first of all, just want to say that any reason that someone has an abortion is a valid reason for having that abortion. But I do think that, to your point, Kelly, that maybe this wasn't the demographic, wasn't the population that was being thought of when some of these laws were passed, either before Dobbs or the subsequent bans after Dobbs. So I do think that hearing stories like this, where it's going beyond how we traditionally think of abortion, and it's talking more about miscarriage management and that type of care is also really important to change hearts and minds. I think it's just really important why we need to center the patient stories and the provider stories in this work to let people know exactly what's at stake.
I don't know, Amelia, are you hearing from women in this situation now as a part of Shout Your Abortion?
Of course, we're hearing these stories. One thing that I want to just say to listeners is that abortion pills are available by mail in all 50 states, regardless of what the state level laws may be. They are safe, they are effective, and they have been used by tens of thousands of people since the Dobbs decision came down to safely terminate pregnancies. This is something that's crucial for people to understand, is that legality and safety no longer mean the same thing. This is not pre-Roe days where going outside of regulation, going outside of the medical establishment meant something really shady. But you know, networks exist that are helping people get what they need regardless of legality. And people need to know that no matter where they live, they can go to plancpills.org and find an option.
Now, let me follow up with that and say, again, this poll was taken really after but it didn't come up in conversation, after the Supreme Court was having conversation and as they're now considering how they'll vote whether or not to limit the access to the medication that you speak of. But just so you have a chance to respond to that, should the decision come down from the Supreme Court, well, we're going to limit access, you say that's not going to stop those pills being moved around by women who know other women need them across the country.
Absolutely not. And no court, no FDA decision, no governing body is going to be able to remove mifepristone and misoprostol from the rotation. These drugs are here. They're here to stay. There are networks mailing pills overseas, you know, across the border from Mexico. These pills exist online just from retailers that are selling them just like any other drugs. And the Plan C website is really amazing, where they go and test all of these different sources, and anything that's listed on that site, plancpills.org, has been vetted for the safety of and like veracity of the drugs themselves, for the shipping time, for the price. So people just need to kind of get comfortable with the idea that having an abortion doesn't mean going to the doctor anymore, and it doesn't necessarily mean following the law.
So we've talked about the pills. We've talked about the women that people did not think were in the line of fire. And now to you, Aaron, I want to talk about this Arizona 1864 bill that's just been passed. It's not been implemented yet. That's going to happen a little bit later. Perhaps a lower court has to look at it again. This is in Arizona. This bill was put on the books when Arizona was a territory, not even a state. You know, a lot of people are quite upset about it. And Republicans are making a point to distance themselves from the bill that the high court passed. So tell us about the political impact and whether or not this could be another issue or factor that moves the needle.
I think it will definitely move the needle in Arizona. I think for most residents of the United States, you know, this becomes what's going on in Arizona, what's going on in Florida. It's confusing. But for me, I think the biggest takeaway is yes, Republicans, including Donald Trump, have said that, you know, the Arizona law goes too far. And I think it's politically naive to think that that Republican Congress, that Republican Senate, that Republican winning Donald Trump, who has bragged about being the one responsible for Dobbs for ending Roe v. Wade. I think Arizona, the law in Arizona is something that would be discussed on the federal level. So they're walking, and there, I mean, Republicans are walking away from it some now because it's not politically efficacious at the ballot box. But once they are there to legislate, Arizona and the strictest states become model legislation. And, you know, I'm not an alarmist.
I just want to point out that in 2018, the Massachusetts legislature repealed an 1875 law that was on the books, which was similar to what the Arizona law was. And at the time, I remember thinking, is this necessary? Who would ever take an old law? But here we are. So,
you know, as was said, for 50 years, elements of the Republican Party have been working to outlaw abortion. And they're not for states' rights. I mean, they are in other things, but they're not for states' rights here. They want to do a federal ban. And yes, they're dancing around it some now because of, again, concerns at the ballot box. But if you have that Republican Congress of gerrymandered districts, you have Donald Trump running and winning, and that this is the kind of thing, it is not... it's not alarmist to say that, yes, they're not going to use the exact 18 whatever legislation from Arizona, but work for a federal ban would begin.
All right. Finally, when President Trump announced his position finally, which was let's take it back to the states and let the states, and he didn't say anything about possibly signing a law about a federal ban, as you've mentioned, Aaron, he upset some people in the movement that have been supporting him. Now, others, a lot of the large groups have come forward to say, we don't really like it, but we're still supporting him. But here is an anti-abortion voter, Rebecca Heine. She was speaking to CNN about how upset she is about his moving towards a state's rights take on abortion rights.
Now to come out and essentially surrender on this issue is, there are many words for it, but extremely disappointing. As a mom, you know, the worst thing that you can be is just disappointed. And that's where I am right now with Donald Trump on life. It's not as though Donald Trump has ever had an issue taking a bold and divisive stand when he believed that it was either right to do or right politically. And so I do characterize this as a betrayal.
All right. Do you think that's going to make a difference, Aaron and Mary Rose?
No. I don't. I think he's doing a wink nod. I think if that legislation were to reach his desk, he would sign it. You know, I think for a long time people said, oh, you know, he's from New York. He doesn't really think these ways. Well, he's appointed justices that think that way, and he's supporting candidates who think that way. So I think the individuals quoted there, I think their concern is misplaced. We saw with Dobbs what Donald Trump would do and what he would celebrate. This is just election-seeking Donald Trump, not in-office Donald Trump.
Mary Rose?
I completely agree. Donald Trump and his allies have an entire playbook targeting not just abortion, but now we've seen also birth control and IVF. If given the chance, he will sign every anti-abortion law that's put in front of him. And to Erin's point, the reason we're even talking about this mifepristone case is because of a Trump-appointed justice on the Fifth Circuit that ended up sending this case up to the Supreme Court. And so it's not just what he's saying now, it's what he's done before, and it's the judges and justices that he's put in place.
So final, last word from you, Mary Rose. Another factor that perhaps could be influential in shifting attitudes as they are now reflected in this poll, Massachusetts is under a lot of pressure from people who are coming from other states to get access to services, reproductive services. And so are the physicians here. And Massachusetts was never a panacea, nor was it a place where the access was overwhelmingly available to everyone. I mean, it's obviously better than many other places, but, you know, it wasn't great. So what say you about whether or not that pressure brought to bear on Massachusetts in the middle of all this stuff swirling could impact a change in attitudes about the kinds of questions that were asked on this poll?
Absolutely. So I think, first of all, we're fortunate to be in a state and to have leadership in our governor and our legislature that is protecting abortion access and also expanding access for our own residents and for people we know who are traveling to Massachusetts to receive care. I do think that people seeing the influx of patients we have and the strain that puts on us and our providers will hopefully further shift attitudes to show that, as you know, the other panelists have said, abortion bans don't stop abortion. They either force people to travel or they force people to seek other options and figure this out on their own. And so we know that people are coming here because of those bans. And so I hope that can change attitudes as well. But in the meantime, we're just proud that Massachusetts continues to lead by example with our shield laws and our investments in abortion providers and funds.
Thank you all for joining me in this very important conversation.
Thank you, Callie.
Thank you so much.
Erin O'Brien is an associate professor of political science at the University of Massachusetts Boston. Mary Rose Mazzola is the chief external affairs officer for Planned Parenthood League of Massachusetts. And Amelia Bono is the executive director of Shout Your Abortion, an abortion rights advocacy organization. That's it for this week's edition of Under the Radar with Callie Crossley. Listen to us online at GBH News or wherever you get your podcasts, and follow us on Twitter, now X, and Facebook to stay up to date with our programming. Under the Radar with Callie Crossley is a production of GBH, produced by Jesse Steinmetz and engineered by Dave Goodman. Our intern is Two Lee. Our theme music is Fish and Chips by We Are Two Saxies, Grace Kelly and Leo P. Listen again on Wednesday and see you here at 6 p.m. next Sunday for a new episode. I'm Callie Crossley. Thanks for listening.